Bonjour à tous.
Welcome to Talking Europe here on France
24.
Thank you for joining us in a week where Europe is reeling from the surprise announcement of negotiations between the United States and Russia in the absence of Ukraine and the Europeans. For a roundup of these developments, we have the pleasure of being at the European Council with its president, whose job it is to get the 27 member states to agree on all the issues, including the most urgent ones. Antonia Costa, hello. Thank you for this exclusive interview. You've been president since the 1st of December. Let me remind our viewers that you have had a very atypical career. You were born in Goa, India. You were elected in Portugal successively as a minister, then as an MEP, vice president of the European Parliament, mayor of Lisbon and prime minister between 2015 and 2024. You were a socialist in a left bloc alliance where you showed a capacity for finding compromise. This experience is useful for your current position in the EU Council, especially considering the very serious challenges we now face. Some days ago, we saw surprise negotiations between the US and Russia on peace in Ukraine, but without the Ukrainians or the Europeans. What are we to make of this tête-à-tête from which we're excluded?
Hello, and thank you for the invitation. In fact, there are no negotiations as yet. There have been bilateral conversations between the United States and Russia. This is positive, especially if it leads to real negotiations. Negotiations will only take place when the belligerents or their representatives or a mediator accepted by both parties can actually negotiate. So we cannot separate the issue of peace in Ukraine from European security. And that's why we say we won't have credible negotiations with results unless there are negotiations with Ukraine and with the European Union. On our side, we are doing our job. We are preparing for possible negotiations. But for the moment, our effort is to strengthen Ukraine's position. We have been with Ukraine since the first day of the war. We remain alongside Ukraine. We will continue to stand alongside Ukraine in the war, in negotiations, in reconstruction, and above all, in the future of Ukraine as a member state of the European Union.
But when Donald Trump, who does hold the keys to NATO, accuses Vladimir Zelensky of being a dictator and asks him to organize elections urgently, what do you think? How should we respond to that?
You have to work with the facts as they are. In this whole situation, there is only one dictator, and that is Mr. Putin. Trump and Zelensky are presidents elected in accordance with their constitutions. When I visited Ukraine on the 1st of December, I had the opportunity to go to the Ukrainian parliament, to speak with all the political parties there, and they all told me the same thing. They said, this is not the time to hold elections because we have a clear priority, which is to defend ourselves against the Russian invasion, to recover our sovereignty, and to ensure the integrity of our whole territory.
Russia has recognized Ukraine's sovereign right to join the European Union, but not NATO. NATO is Vladimir Putin's bête noire. So Russia is opposed to the deployment of NATO troops in Ukraine, even under the flag of the European Union. What does that mean?
First of all, we have to understand what is at stake. That is, above all, to ensure respect for international law. That means that every state has the right to make sovereign decisions on its own future. Secondly, we're talking about territorial integrity and border security. These are principles of international law that apply everywhere to Ukraine, to Denmark, to Congo. And that's why this is not just an issue between Ukraine and Russia. It's a question for the entire international community. Because if we accept that a state that is a permanent member of the United Nations Security Council, can disregard international law, We're giving the green light for everyone to impose the law of the strongest. Might is right.
But when it comes to European security, Mr. President, Europeans are somewhat divided on what we call security guarantees. In France and even in the United Kingdom, there are those who say that if there are negotiations and if the talks are serious, then we should offer our own armed forces as part of security guarantees. Others are much more reluctant. How do you reconcile these different positions? Because with Trump, things are accelerating.
I supported President Macron's initiative because it was very important to get Europeans around the table, as well as those who are not in the EU, for example, the Canadians. Why? Because it's important to know in such a moment whether we can achieve the negotiations we want and whether we can achieve peace. Everyone wants peace, and no one wants that more than the Ukrainians and President Zelensky. And we need to see how we are going to secure this peace, because this peace cannot just be a ceasefire. It has to be sustained over time. This means that Ukraine must be given assurances that Russia will not take advantage of a small ceasefire only to come back stronger and try once again. Partners and allies like the United States say that they don't agree that Ukraine should join NATO, which was actually the clearest and least costly way of reassuring Ukraine about its future. Well, we need to find alternatives. And to find alternatives, I think it's important to know the readiness of each state. What is each state prepared to do within the framework of peace and security?
And that's what you're discussing, perhaps discreetly, with each of the states. I think you're having non-stop bilateral meetings.
Of course, I'm also working with the member states of the European Union. France has a key position, because countries like France and the United Kingdom will be central to this operation as part of these security measures. But what I have seen is that there are no real differences. There are different degrees of availability. And no one has said, I don't accept what you're doing and you should do something different. So everyone has said frankly what they are willing to do. And I think that together we're all going to make a contribution. And if we succeed, and of course I hope we will, then we can create a comprehensive, just and lasting peace for Ukraine.
And will you name a special envoy if negotiations begin with Europeans, so that there's someone ready? Or would you be that negotiator, Antonio Costa?
That is the question. Well, it certainly won't be me, but it's a question that has already been put to European leaders. Whether there is to be a special envoy from the European Union in the event of negotiations, or even from the European Union with other allies.
And?
Oh, look, the conversation is being had. I haven't talked to all the leaders yet, but I will do so in the next few days.
Another major EU concern about the Trump administration is that of the trade war because, well, the United States is planning to apply customs duties to foreign products, so to European products, equivalent to those imposed on American products. These are called reciprocal clauses, so it's a mixture of all sorts of factors, VAT, environmental standards, and so on. The Commission manages this trade portfolio, but are any EU member states involved? Italy, for example, which is perhaps closer to Elon Musk or Viktor Orban's Hungary, might be tempted to play a separate game. And so then, are we going to be united on this trade issue?
First of all, we must not forget one essential fact. We are friends, partners and allies of the United States. Our trade relations account for 40% of global GDP and 30% of our mutual trade. So when we talk about trade relations between our two sides, We are talking about something that is very serious for the entire global economy. So we don't want to have any trade conflicts, and we want to manage these issues as friends do.
But that's the issue. Do they still consider us allies?
No, but look, the United States have been an ally, a friend, and a partner of European countries for at least two centuries. The Statue of Liberty was a gift from France to the United States. We share values, and the economic weight of our relations is important. It's an incredible thing and one that doesn't exist between any other economic blocs. So what should we do when there are problems between friends? Well, you talk to each other. The United States say, OK, we have a trade deficit in goods. On the other hand, they have a trade surplus in the service sector. But we are not against discussions. Just this week, Commissioner Maros Sefcovic, who is the EU's trade commissioner, went to the United States, and that shows we are having discussions with the United States and that we are talking. So I think we can address these problems, and I think that we must do it. But the most important thing is that Europe and the United States converge towards the same position on the question of the future of our relations when it comes to security. For a number of years, certain EU states, such as France, for example, were saying that it was necessary to reinforce our strategic autonomy, to reinforce the European pillar of NATO. And meanwhile, some European allies were saying, no, 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 it would be a risk to distance ourselves from the US. Well, now it's the United States that is asking us to take more and more responsibility, and in fact, what they are asking us to do is what we already agreed upon. We decided to do it in March 2022 in Versailles. So there is a position of convergence. But to be able to take on those greater responsibilities, we must, of course, reinforce our economy. That is why we say that security and European economic competitiveness go hand in hand. Because only a strong and prosperous economy can enable a greater effort to support our defense sector and our security.
Thank you, Antonio Costa, President of the European Council. And thanks to our viewers for watching. We'll continue the show from the European Parliament with a debate on Ukraine. C'est tout de suite le débat.